Well, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm feeling grateful, and I'm going to talk about gratitude. Which, just as I was sitting here this morning, I realized is a matter of life and death. We just heard that wonderful appeal to our gratitude from Rob. This Sangha would not exist. It would have no life without our appreciation, without our gratitude. We are all connected. We are all connected. I recently had the opportunity with our teacher GD's help to go to the home of a Dakota elder. Her name is Darlene. And in that time that I spent in her home and in her company, she said, "We are all connected. Time and time again." And so it is a reverberation in my heart and my mind that I'd like to share with all of you. And what I'd like to say about that is, as all of us, in not every day, but in a lot of days, grapple with the unpleasant in whatever forms it comes up in. It's very important, I think, to take the long view and to understand and have as part of our life the vastness of life and death. And recently, I wrote down a little quote from an author that many of you, I'm sure, know, Beatrix Potter, who said, "Even the smallest one can change the world." So, even the smallest amount of appreciation, of respect, of gratitude is life-giving. I spent some time one weekend in Grand Portage, which is way, way up on the North Shore. And there is a state park there that has, among many other things, a series of signs along the walking and hiking paths that contain the wisdom and respect for another indigenous elder, Nokomis, who was a grandmother, an Ojibwe tribe or band grandmother, who was highly respected and who contributed to her tribe and family a great deal of knowledge and wisdom about how to live this life. And I want to recite for you some of the things that were on these signs, which I was deeply affected by. So one of them said, "We honor the earth, for it is our grandmother, and its gifts are of our grandmother. We know our grandmother changes her spirit, cold to warm, warm to hot, hot to warm, warm to cold. This is her cycle. But with each change, she gives gifts that are appropriate and necessary." Walk with her now. She will show you how to live through the seasons. So, this is a whole view of how to live life that is hard for us to access in our current way of living life, in our current culture. But that's mostly because we're unable to appreciate that it's there all the time. We are blind to it. So this view, walk with her now. She will show you how to live through the seasons. Grandmother Earth. It is always true, in my experience, that this thing we call universe, this thing we call life, teaches us everything we need to know, including how to appreciate each day and each gift. In Buddhism, we speak about duality oftentimes with the energy of unappreciation. It's something we have to overcome. It's something we don't want to do. It's a problem. And yet, how can we possibly be grateful without scarcity? It's just like the seasons. I love this. This is her cycle. Just that matter of fact, grounding in, this is how humans are. This is how daffodils are. This is how angry babies and angry adults are. It's just true. So this walking with Mother Earth or Grandmother Earth through the seasons is that story or saying that we often talk about in Buddhism of just walk in the mist and it will penetrate in time without you necessarily noticing. But this realizing that that's what we're doing every day, walking in this bounty, is very important to our happiness. It's just crucial because otherwise it's too darn depressing. We're out of balance. So recognizing abundance and being grateful for everything on which this life depends, even when we don't like cold, for instance, even when we don't like scarcity or the other political party, etc., etc., or just not having Starbucks coffee, the best coffee, you know. It shows up in so many ways. So it's important, this grounding, and just the reality of how things work, to appreciate what's necessary for life, and to appreciate how much of life death is. We can't have new life. I mean, just pause a minute and consider before you take the next breath that keeps you alive, but only if you do it X times a minute, how there could possibly be life without change. Can we appreciate that? Yes, we can. But it so quickly fades. So just knowing our natures, how are we going to cultivate that which gives us happiness? Where are we going to find the resource for that? Well, we can start by saying it's important to find it. It's important to include it. So this cold to warm to hot to warm, this cycle is ever changing. But it's not actually that unpredictable. It's just ignorable. And it's predictable that we as humans, who are naturally inclined to seek that which is pleasant and avoid that which is unpleasant, it's predictable, therefore, that we will suffer greatly because we're ignoring that cycle, right? It's one of those kind of just sort of amazingly, obviously easy to ignore things. And what wakes us up to it is our suffering. That's not ignorable. So we are all connected. But inside of that, we are also interdependent. I don't know about you, but I'm feeling right now the interdependence of other people's suffering with my life, other people's opinions and actions and habits and likes and dislikes are connecting to me in this life. Oftentimes these days in a way I don't appreciate or I find hard to appreciate. So over the holiday, of course, there were conversations about the state of things in families, in the world, in the universe. And I realized, I said to somebody, you know, I think I am grateful for Mr. Trump's strengths in being bold. And his gift for disregarding the conventional, because it shakes things up in a way that I can appreciate that something that I hold dear, which is the principles of this democracy, are quite fragile. That has come as a great shock to me, that those principles can be undermined, they can be turned and used as a weapon to pierce my heart. So this, being able to to know the seasons for what they are and to live through them happily is something that I begin to appreciate in a way that I wouldn't without the aid of Mr. Trump's influence and his and the position from which he does that. So I and President Trump are connected in a way that affects life and death. So here's another thing that the signs in the Grand Portage State Park said. The forest provided everything for Nokomis. Now this is the elder I was talking about earlier, the grandmother. The forest lives in cycles. The plants produced a harvest only once a year. If a plant's harvest time was missed, the harvest was gone. The food or resource was missed for an entire year. The Ojibwe were dependent on this circle of life. Nokomis looked on the forest to support her family. She had great respect for all living things. They brought her family life. Look at the forest around you as Nokomis did. Respect all the living things that you see. Think of what it provides to you today. So if, like probably everyone here, you struggle with loving the principles but struggling on how to bring them into life, to practice them in a way that's helpful to others, that makes a difference and upholds that which you value, then we need to appreciate how this cycle works. And in this state park, repeatedly these signs would say, and this is a tree, and this is a way in which it was respected and contributed. And there were probably a dozen signs. And each sign, somewhere in there, had a statement about an offering. So pine trees were a source of material to make tea. And every time Nokomis harvested pine needles, she made an offering. She gave thanks. Every time her family members would cross the river, which had so much bounty that was important to the life that they were living, they would make an offering. They would give thanks. So we all know about saying grace before meals, but we probably don't practice it in that way. I know I don't, right? So in a way, what we need to do is quite simple. And appreciating how life-giving that is the part that's easy to miss. So we can all try that out. Giving thanks for everything that enables this life to arise. Think of what it provides to you today. So let's just take a quiet moment with our eyes closed and reflect back to Nokomis, who to this very day is offering the wisdom, who is inviting us to walk with her, that we may learn how to navigate the seasons of this life. So this appreciation is kind of a broad term. So Nokomis's way of navigating the seasons includes an appreciation of balance, of gifts received daily, of the value of offering thanks, of the consequences of carelessness and ignorance. I feel sharply remorse for how often I am dismissive. I'm taking things for granted. Every now and then I will get something that gets my attention and kind of wraps me over the head. And find I can be grateful for that because the sting in my heart that comes when I realize how little thanks I gave for all that I've received. So appreciation of the need to care for our connection and interdependence, that however tiny a thing it might be, I'm currently spending time in the house of a friend while they're away. It's easy to appreciate that they would offer me their home so generously and graciously. Say, sure, yes, come, stay, here's the keys. But they also left me with some information about taking care of things. And I know them well, so I know some of how they do things in their household. And it's not necessarily the way I do things. But particularly preparing this talk even, it's like that there is a great joy in just taking care of things the way they take care of things. Things that I wouldn't do in my household, but I do there, because it's a way of showing a respect for the gift that has been given. To do it in their way so that they can understand that language, the language of I left it as hopefully as beautiful as I found it. I left it in the way they wished for it to be left, and perhaps attended to some things that they didn't take care of when they left. Maybe I can leave it better. So this appreciation of this need to care for our connection and interdependence has to do with being trapped in this me, being the center of the universe in my me. More and more I recognize how prevalent that is, how inescapable it is. I really cannot have a thought without me entering in. But to appreciate that that's so is enough. because that sets up a condition for how I respond. So I'm impressed by this care in how things are taken, how much is taken, the mindset with which something is taken. I am now up to mouse number 62 based on my life at Hokyoji. And I know that mice die as a natural course of their lives, just as I will die. Nonetheless, it is a much different thing to each time stop and carefully observe the eyes of this mouse, the death of this mouse, to discard it in a place that another being might have the opportunity to eat it, and that it may go to nirvana, giving life to all life. Having that as a reflection is something that I'm very grateful for, because it contributes to my happiness and to my wisdom about how things work. These things that I keep wishing weren't so, but they're included, they're necessary. So the last thing in this particular sign was, walk with us. We will create a time of learning to balance our existence. So I am guessing that despite my ignorance carelessness, this invitation has been being offered to those of us who came to this country through our ancestors since we arrived, and continues to be offered despite the fact that we as a people, through our ancestors, through the conditions, have done our very best to eliminate them. Just like I try to eliminate mosquitoes and Asian beetles and mice entering my home. And that gives rise to humility. Alfred Einstein had something to say about this that I have never read before, but I want to share with you. A human being is part of a whole called by us the universe, a part limited to time and space. Again, that grounding in truth. This is the cycle of Grandmother Earth, of humans. He experiences himself, his thought and feelings, as something separated from the rest, a kind of prison for us. Restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons nearest to us. That phrase, a kind of prison for us, really struck me. And it actually struck me relative to my favorite difficult person, President Trump. And I thought, yes, he really is in a prison. Yes, I'm in prison with him. I might not be in the same cell, but I'm in prison with him. And, you know, even as I just read that, it just, my heart moves. You know, I can feel that energy moving. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. Our task must be to free ourselves from the prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. So I think I'll add that to my morning and evening routine. And I'll get tired of it, and I'll need a new one sooner or later. But for now, I'm going to try that one on for size. We are all connected. And we need to keep that knowing with us every day. Darlene has had a very difficult life. And that depended on me, my relatives, my ancestors who were the same color skin as me. It depended on me learning that culture, the behaviors of that culture, not speaking up. It depended on many small, tiny things I did and didn't do. Even the smallest one can change the world. Maybe like me, you feel like, what can I really do? One night when I was in the lower part of the workshop, I heard a scuffling, and I went in search of its source and found a tall, empty trash can with 5 mice in it. And the first thing I said was, you guys have to find another place to be. And suddenly I realized, I'm it. I'm responsible for helping this situation. Even the smallest act is changing the world. So I took the trash can with the mice and I put it in my car, standing up so that it wouldn't tip over and I wouldn't have mice running around in my car. I reflected and I said, okay, when I was at Great Vow, where they had mice, that's the monastery in Oregon that I went to, they did a scientific experiment and discovered that if they took a mouse 3 miles away, it would not find its way back to the monastery. So I took the trash can with the 5 mice down the road, looking carefully at my odometer because it was late and dark and I was tired and I had to go to the bathroom. And at 3 miles, I stopped and got out of the car after pulling over to the side of this dirt road, and I realized it was right across the street from another house. But I let them out anyway. And hoped that maybe they would feed an owl who was probably creating new children. That didn't really solve the problem, though, right? It didn't purify life. It just participated in one of the gazillion million individual unique ways of expressing life. Cold, warm, hot, warm, cold, the cycles. We honor the earth, for it is our grandmother, and its gifts are of our grandmother. We know our grandmother changes her spirit. This is her cycle, but with each change, she gives gifts that are appropriate and necessary. Gratitude. Thank you. We have 22 minus 17 is 5 minutes for comments and questions, and maybe a few more. Yes, Angie. Spiders and bugs especially challenge my sense of ownership and possession. Who else? Yes.
Thank you. I found myself with a lot of really, really intense physical reactions to parts of your talk. Particularly when you mentioned 45 with President. But throughout, there were some things that just brought up a lot of things. And so I guess I just wanted to share that, and that my experience of the talk involved a lot of just noticing my own reactivity and my own tension.
Thank you for being that vulnerable with us. Yes, Sosan. So we have your blessing if we actually want to say more.
One thing that I feel like I feel it's important to call out is at one point in the talk you said something like we as a people should recognize through our ancestors how we have worked in ways that have eliminated indigenous people, something like that. And so I just wanted to acknowledge that some of the people here, we as a people, some of the people here actually are indigenous. And some of the people here, their ancestors didn't come here by their own choice. So it seems like, it's just as we're using language, especially as white people,
yes.
I think to just remember that, not to make the white normative. So.
Thank you. Thank you.
We're all learning.
Yes, thank you. I'll be going to Dismantling Whiteness later.
Oh yeah, we forgot to announce that. Dismantling Whiteness group is today after the Dharma talk will be in the class.
Yes. So thanking for calling that out. Thank you for calling that out. And thank you for those who are listening to receive it. I wanted to check back with your reports of physical and just say, is there anything that you'd like to request to support you as that is happening in your body?
Or maybe even anyone else.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So in the talk, you mentioned that, you know, you can't have a thought without you entering that situation. And then we're talking about, you know, physical sensations on the body. So how do you rationalize that? You know, if it's like, are we experiencing just like, so you have a physical reaction to something on your body, but if you remove yourself from that equation, then what do you experience? Is it just like the kind of like the nature of like life?
Well, we certainly experience sensations,
yeah.
Right? And one of the classic parts of the Buddhist teaching was again and again going through the aspects of the six senses, which include the mind, as part really of a meditation on the nature of the being of this human. As a way of helping us penetrate what that really was. And like learning to ride a bicycle, balance is something that can be defined and talked about, but until we experience it, we don't realize it. So, it is confusing or seemingly in need of reconcilement because of our view and our current inability to access a view of both the duality and the non-duality side of things. So there's an element really of great faith in practicing in accord with the Buddhist teaching, sort of with a faith that will create the conditions for the experience that he's talking about. Does that help? It's kind of intellectual. I think that's a pretty accurate teaching, really. This we can only do our best in every moment, all the time. That's the only thing we really can do, and that includes recognizing that our view is distorted. But it's not impossible for us to have an experience of non-distorted thinking, and the very awareness of the distortion radically changes the causes and conditions of that view. There was something else that came but went, so. Who else might have something? Yes.
I had something which wasn't so much a question as just a thought. I was thinking a lot about gratitude and land and being grateful for this land that I do feel connected to in a certain way, and trying to also understand how to be grateful for something that I am not grateful for how it was received.
Yes.
If I think about as a white person on this land that was stolen.
Yes.
I was asking myself how to be grateful for a gift that wasn't a gift, and that, and it's, yeah.
Yes. 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 I struggle with that as well. A couple of things. One, I rely a lot in my practice on what I refer to as the three tenets. And those are aligned with the three pure precepts that the Buddha taught. The three pure precepts are do no harm, do all good, free all beings. And the tenets that go with those are don't know mind, bearing witness, appropriate action. And with a little addition of even though those things don't really arise in a linear, neat and tidy fashion like that. But I return to that as a way of helping me open out of whatever kind of constricted and struggling place my mind is in, to just, and to use bearing witness as a way of remaining present in the moment, that I might receive or that I can give rise then to appropriate action. Because the little extra teaching is, if you find yourself trying to figure out the appropriate action, return to don't know mind and bearing witness. So it sounds like that's exactly what you're doing. And what I do when I bump into this question or thought, it's like, well, what about that? And how do I feel moved to act? What do I do right now in this moment? And one of the things that I also often kind of get an inkling of is whenever I'm in an either or kind of a duality place, that there's room to open that up. So in my adventures with mice and bugs, one of the things that has come up is thinking about, well, what is ownership? Right? What is ownership? And I actually had an opportunity to speak with an indigenous person who came to teach us something about their way of looking at things. And I said, how is ownership viewed of land? And this particular elder said, ownership doesn't come into it. And I said, and yet so much of what I'm understanding is such a clear taking of responsibility for caring. Well, I didn't say that. He said it. He said, we're here to take care of land. And things that interfere with that are what our concern is. That's what needs to be repaired or changed. So that was helpful to me in going beyond, at least intellectually. But I think it still leaves this issue of how do we bring things back into a balance. There's a reference to that in here. It's like, how do we bring things, you know, one of the ways the question comes up for me is, how can one possibly make amends or repair the acts that have occurred, the current, very inconvenient truth for me who's living in a house that's on land that was taken in a way that was violent and not respectful, not appreciative, was careless of how that affects the interdependent balance. And I only know that I have to keep working with that truth and choosing to stay with it to the best of my ability and awareness at any given time. That's how I'm practicing with it. And I would certainly invite anybody else who has, because this is how life is. This is a particular now in front of me example, the quandary, the dilemma that you bring to the fore. But there are lots of things like that in our daily life. And how can we be wise and compassionate and balanced in living our, you know, upholding the values that we've been taught. And I just have to turn again and again to a faith that the appropriate action will come forward and that I'll be awake enough to see it and then brave enough to step forward into it.